Before we get started, I do want to thank everybody for all your prayers and the meals and support and everything you've given my wife and myself. She's getting there. It's going to still take her a while, but she's doing very well. I do ask that you'd pray for Dr. Getch. He's the associate pastor out at Lancaster Baptist Church. He's the vice president of West Coast Baptist College. His daughter was killed yesterday in a car wreck not far from where our house was there in Lancaster. We was there, and one of the granddaughters is still in intensive care, and we'd appreciate your prayers there. He's in charge of all the graduation, and their baccalaureate is tonight, and with all this, and I guarantee you Dr. Getch will be there, and he'll fulfill his role, but he's going to really have a heavy heart, so pray for that family as well. All right, Matthew the tax collector. Several verses there, you can look them up in your own time, but this is an interesting study. We don't know a lot about Matthew. We should, I guess, know quite a bit. He wrote the book of Matthew. But there's an awful lot that we're going to cover here. His name is Levi. Now, just take it slow and try to put some of this together, and it will hopefully not cause confusion, but answer some questions that you might have. Matthew's known as Levi, the son of Alphaeus. Okay? He's identified that way, but he's the son of Alphaeus. Now, I think that Jesus gave him the name Matthew. And I've noticed this about many of the apostles, some of the Old Testament people. God changes their name at different points. He changed Jacob's name, Israel. He changed Abraham's name from Abram to Abraham, from Sarai to Sarah. And there's different ones throughout the Old Testament, but also he changed the name of from Simon to Peter. And as we get into some of the different names of the apostles, it seems like things have changed a little bit. Now, I personally think that Matthew was not his name, that his name was Levi, and we'll get to that in here in just a little bit. But Matthew and James, the other apostle, are brothers. They're brothers. Like Simon Peter, he was called something different. James and John, they were called the sons of thunder by Jesus. That's the name that he refers to them at. But I just think that because of the name Matthew means, that it has significance here. His name means the gift of God, the gift of Jehovah. We'll see that many, many people, whenever they think of Matthew, just like in our title, that it's a negative connotation. And why in many of the apostles they have brought about a negative thinking. Whenever you think my brain just quit. When you think of Thomas, thank you, brother. There's a negative connotation there. He was the doubter. But yet, He was one of the most courageous of all of the apostles, ready to give his life for Jesus Christ. Let us go and die with him. Why don't they bring that out? The same thing with Matthew, the tax collector. Well, we're going to look at that a little bit. But Levi, the term Levi here, we'll see how that bears out as well. But I think when his name was Levi, which means to be joined, and we'll cover that, but I think Jesus changed his name to the gift of Jehovah. Why? Because he had that negative connotation. People associated him with negativeness, but there was nothing negative about Matthew. He's the brother, both James and Matthew are the term, they are sons of Alphaeus, which makes them brothers. Both were the sons of Alphaeus here. We'll get into this a little bit further. For example, in Mark chapter 2 and verse 14, it says, "And as he passed by, he saw Levi." Now notice who says this. Mark is the one that says that. He calls him Levi, which was his given name. "The son of Alphaeus, sitting at the receipt of custom." Luke, in chapter 6 and verse 15, Matthew and Thomas, James, the son of who? Alphaeus. They're both their brothers, both of them the apostles. We put James and John together, but many people don't put Matthew and James here together. They are brothers. Then he goes on with other names as well. Now, Mark and Luke call what we call Matthew, in their books that they wrote, both of them call him Levi. That's how he would have been known to them. That's how they have grown up together, and they have called him Levi. But Matthew himself, whenever he refers to him, he calls him Matthew. Matthew is a... I just killed my notes there. There we go. Now we're going. Matthew means gift of God, and I think Jesus tries to counteract and overcome that negative connotation that Matthew has. And when Levi, the term is joined, or one who joins himself, that was used in a positive way. When I started reading commentators, the commentators were say that he was joined to the world. That means that he was joined to the world. A negative connotation. Where does it indicate anywhere that he was joined to the world? It doesn't. And that's why I think Jesus gave Matthew the name Matthew, because even in Levi, the term joined was given in a positive way. Because Jacob, he was married to Levi, or to Leah there. Leah said, "This now is going to join me to my husband." This was a positive thing. But yet when you read commentators, they all seem to try to turn it around and make everything about Matthew being a tax collector and everything a negative. And so don't let them do that. Matthew lived and had his business there in the city of Capernaum. That's where Jesus had his center of ministry, was in Capernaum. Matthew was collecting taxes there near Capernaum when Jesus called him and said, "Follow me." Now, Jesus called Matthew as an apostle, even though people would question his past. You have to understand, he was rejected, not because of who he was or what he did, but because of their concept. And I'm bringing this out because, you know, we as Christians do the same thing. We reject people. You'll see somebody with all kind of tattoos, and boy, we'll just back off. Wait a minute, they need to get saved too. You see people with long hair, guys with long hair. You see girls with the green and purple and pink and all the different colors and stuff like, and sometimes people back off. Wait a minute. They're the ones that need the gospel maybe, huh? You do not reject people just because of what they seem outwardly. Who do you reject? If you're given the opportunity of giving somebody the gospel, who is it that you and I would reject? He was a Jew, but he worked for the Romans. The Romans were considered their enemies. So I mean, everybody's got to have a job. Somebody's going to do these things. And so he gets a job as being a tax collector, all right? The Romans occupied Palestine. They'd ruled over Palestine for many years here. So being a Jew, he was hated by the Romans, okay? Now, the Jews, like Matthew that became tax collectors for Rome, they were hated by the Jews. Now, who's he going to fellowship with? Who's going to reach out to him? And this is what we do in our society. You have a sodomite. He may not want to be a sodomite. He may think he has or she has these tendencies. So they don't like that lifestyle. They don't want that lifestyle. But because, what do? We reject them. Totally reject them. What alternative do they have? They don't like that style, but they're accepted there. And they live in conflict. When you think of the eunuchs, you go to the scriptures and it says some were made eunuchs. Some made themselves eunuchs. And some were born eunuchs. So if we just totally reject them, we don't want to be around them, we don't want to speak to them, we don't want to have lunch with them, nothing. What are we doing? We are pushing them so far away from God and into a life that they don't really want. Who's to say they weren't born a eunuch? What is the first thing we start doing when kids are little bitty? Oh, you got a boyfriend? Got a girlfriend? When you get married, the whole thing, the connotation is you've got to fit our lifestyle, and if you don't fit our lifestyle, we push them into a different lifestyle. We push kids into a group in their high schools and grade schools that maybe they really don't want to be in, but nobody else will try to help them and work with them. Now you say, are you pushing LGBTQ ZXYZ X1412? No, I'm totally against it. But I'll sit down with a homosexual and I'll give them a gospel and I'll have lunch with them and I'll try my best, whether it's through Facebook or through phone calls or anything to witness to them and become their friends so that they can get saved. But you see what we do, and the same thing was happening with Matthew. The connotation here is that Matthew is such a wicked, vile boy. He's just a tax collector. Well, he's hated by the Romans. He's hated by the Jews. Tax collectors were known as thieves. They were known as crooks. Many of them were dishonest, and many collected more money than was required by the government. The Roman government would set down a tax. This is what the tax you have to pay. Okay? Now, it was up to the tax collector. He didn't get paid a wage. He would get whatever was above that for his wage. What wage did Matthew set? Was he extorting people? So we don't know. Then why do we have such a negative connotation against him and saying he was just extorting people? We are drawing assumptions from something that is totally wrong. What if I say the word lawyer? Is that a positive or negative? How many of you say it's a positive thing if you're a lawyer? How many would say they think of a negative thing when you say lawyer? Well, why don't you think of David Gibbs? One of the most godly men I've ever met, with the Christian Law Association. Wonderful, godly man. Tremendous preacher. You can be a lawyer and not be a liar, thief, a crook. How about politicians? There's all kinds of politicians. Immediately, we think of liars and extortioners and just crooked. But yet there's people like Baldwin, a wonderful, wonderful senator. Mike Huckabee, I don't totally agree with everything Mike Huckabee does, but I think Mike Huckabee is a good Christian man. There are several Christians down in Oklahoma and different places and different states, godly Christian men, but there's that association. You cannot just wrap everybody into a package and say they are that. And that's what we've done with Matthew. Now, we've got to be careful about these things. You know, in the Christian movie or series or whatever it is called Chosen, anybody ever hear of that? You've heard of the, okay? How do they portray Matthew? He's effeminate, he's eccentric, he's a wacko. That's not portrayed in the scriptures. That comes from the false assumptions that man makes about Matthew. I believe Matthew was a believer. I believe he believed in the promise of the Messiah. First of all, he was raised in the home of Alphaeus, which was a godly man and had a godly home and godly relatives and rubbed shoulders with Jesus and all of this through their life. I think he was raised in that and had believed and made a profession. I think it's wrong to assume that Matthew was dishonest. You say, why? Because Jesus never mentions dishonesty in connection with Matthew. Jesus does not mention dishonesty in relation to Zacchaeus. So, well, he extorted money. Where does it say that? It doesn't.
it said Zacchaeus had this banquet after Jesus came and he put his faith in Jesus, and he said, Lord, he said, if I have. He didn't say he did. The connotation is he did not, but if he had, then he'd pay him back so many fold. It is our thinking and the way people have portrayed Matthew that leads us to think negative about Zacchaeus, think negative about Matthew. They assume that Matthew is guilty simply by association because he's a tax collector. Well, somebody got to work in the government. Just because you work in the government, does that make you a wicked politician? No. I know people work in the government offices and stuff, good, godly people. And they won't go along with all the other stuff. So that guilt by association, we must be careful that we don't judge people by that association. Now, tax collectors were usually ostracized by the people of their cities. They were classified with prostitutes. They were classified by other people that had shady characters. But that doesn't mean that the rest of them were. So don't jump to assumptions in a negative manner. Be careful, because we can force people to continue in their sin or force them to be involved and be totally fellowshipping with the wrong crowds. Yes, some were dishonest. Yes, some were greedy, and some were just totally money-minded. But who else is going to associate with them if we don't? Who's going to win them to Christ if we won't take that time to work with them? Now, Jesus sees beyond our sin. He sees what we can be, not necessarily what we had been. Jesus saw that even though Matthew was a tax collector, he could still be used by God. Jesus called him. How many of you would probably went to the government office and tried to hire a politician to be the apostle? I don't think so. Why? Because of the way we think. But Jesus sees something in these people that we don't see. And we've got to get the mind of Christ and look at people, not what they have been, but what God can do with them. They can still be used by God. Now, Jesus still wants to use them. He wants to use you. He wants to use me. It don't make any difference what our past was. We have a problem of forgiving ourselves. As I look back in my life, you cannot believe. I wouldn't even hesitate. It'd scare you to death. I was thinking the other day when Brother Getch, his daughter, was killed. I went back to the times in my life and what we used to do and how we used to run and things. It scared me to death. And thank God that he saved me, even in spite of what I was. He sees what we can be. I would never, ever have, in the wildest imaginations, ever thought God would ever use me as a preacher or as a missionary or your Sunday school teacher. And if I told you the stories that from my past, it would absolutely curl your toes and you would say, step down from the pulpit. But God saved this old wretch, and he called him to preach. Why? It just amazes me. God saw what I would be, not what I had been. And it's time some of you forgave yourself. You're constantly looking back in your life and you're saying, oh, this is what I was, this is what I was, this is what I was, this is what I was. Well, maybe you were. But God called you. He saved you. And he still wants to use you. And if you don't forgive yourself, you'll never get beyond that, and you will sit there in your little rocking chair and you'll accomplish nothing for God. I don't care how old you are, how young you are. Hey, God's not done with Miss Betty yet. Huh? God's not done with you yet. Don't make any difference what your past is. Do not give up on people. I don't care if they claim to be a sodomite. I don't care if they claim to be a transgender. I don't care what they claim, what jail they were in, how much time they spent in jail, how much time they were in drugs or any of that stuff, how bad of an alcoholic they were. Don't give up on people. God didn't give up on you. God didn't give up on me. And he wants to use you. Now, Matthew obeyed when Jesus comes up and says, follow me. He immediately obeyed, instantly. He said, follow me. That's all he said. Jesus walking along, he comes up to Matthew and says, follow me. Now, wait a minute. If he was not saved, Jesus is not going to be calling him. You say, well, what about Judas? He called him because that was part of prophecy. The rest of them had nothing to do with that. If he loved money so much, there would have been some hesitation there. If he was so tied to his job, to his position, to all of this, he would not have just immediately left. Say, how do you know that? If God spoke to your heart right now and said, I don't care how old you are, I want you to go to the mission field. And I see it in church after church all across this country, where God's speaking to the hearts of people and trying to call people, and they will not move. Why? They are tied to money. They are tied to their job. They are not tied to Jesus Christ. Matthew was so tied and so believed in the Messiah that when Jesus said, follow me, he left everything. We are so much more caught up in this world than we want to admit to people. I don't care what age we are. First thing we say, well, what about my job? Well, I got a family. Well, how am I going to live? Well, they've got snakes over there. See, we are so caught up with the thinking and mindset of the world that we miss this. Matthew was so focused on Jesus, on the Messiah, that when Jesus walks up and says, follow me, Matthew walks away from his job, walks away from everything, and follows Jesus. Do you see what he's doing? See what he's saying here? Follow me. You talk about a man of great faith. And I see this in young people. That's why we deal mostly with young people, because They're ready. That's why we had such a great outpouring in the military ministry. We baptized over 500 people in 4 years. And scores of these young men and women are all across the world to this day still serving the Lord as pastors and missionaries. Why? They were in the military. They were used to taking orders. And when Jesus said, I want you to go, they said, okay. They walked away from their career, but they were so tied to Jesus, they were used to taking orders. We're used to giving orders. We want things our way, Burger King. And if we don't get it our way, we're going to sit there and we're going to think about it and mull about it and until the ship comes in, you know. And by then, I have people come up in the mission conferences almost every time and somebody says, you know, when I was back here, God called me to go to the mission field, and I didn't go. And now it's too late. How willing are you and I to serve God immediately when God speaks? That's why I think he loved God. He wasn't in love with money. No other details are given how he come to Christ, accept him as Messiah. That's why I believe he was saved in Alpheus' home. Matthew acted immediately and followed Jesus. What great faith. He left his position. The desires and work of a lifetime became meaningless to him. I remember that feeling. The only thing that can bring joy and satisfaction to a person's life is following Jesus wherever it leads. Would you? Matthew's not just an example of those that were called by God to special service, but an example of obedience to all Christians. True obedience requires three things. Number one, we must do exactly what we're told to do. When I was sitting on that platform at Faith Baptist Church back in Sedalia, Missouri, as the pastor sitting right over here, and God said, you're going to Africa. I had a wonderful church. I'd turned down two raises for my salary. They'd given us a home to live in for free and paid this tuition for our kids. Had a great Christian school, running 100 kids, and God was just blessing people getting saved and all of this. And God said, you're going to Africa. And I said, yes, sir. Why? He's the boss. Follow me immediately. I said, yes, sir. You must do exactly what we're told to do. We must do it when we're told to do it. That night, my wife said, I knew what had happened. She knows me. I never told her. She knew. And then somebody in the church, dear, sweet little old lady, come up to me and she said, Brother Stancis. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, when you leaving? I'd not told anybody. She says, written all over you. We have got to do what we're told, and we have to follow through when we're told to do it. And then we must do it with the right spirit. It's not, oh man, I've got to leave this wonderful church. No, no, I get to serve God, and he's called me to Africa. What a wonderful place. I wouldn't trade experiences with you that God has given us or with anybody. Not all of them was good, but I wouldn't even trade them. Now, Matthew had a desire to let other people know about his new life, that God had saved him. He had a banquet afterwards and invited all the people he knew, the publicans and sinners, the people in the community, He prepared that great meal and he invited all his public or his friends and everything. What was the purpose? He was celebrating his new Christian life. He wanted them to know. He gave a public confession of his surrender to Christ, to follow Christ, and to have that opportunity to introduce his old friends and acquaintances with Jesus Christ in order to get them saved. Now, watch this. Matthew was rescued from a life without meaning. Really, it had no meaning, no peace. And I hear people talking. They hate their boss. They hate the people they work with. They hate the job they're doing. They hate the town they live in. And I'm thinking, what a horrible life. God says, I want you to have meaning in your life. When I surrendered to Christ to go to the mission field, look, God gave me meaning. When he saved my wicked soul, I was going for a career. I'd have been retired years and years and years ago. But when God called me out of the military, saved my soul, for the first time in my life, I had purpose. I really had meaning in life. There was a reason why I was here. And I look at people and they sit around, they sit around, they sit around, they sit around, and they do nothing. There's no meaning to life. Look, I'm retired. I've got meaning in my life. That's why I'm still preaching out. That's why I'm still witnessing. That's why I'm still going places and doing what I can do to bring people to Jesus Christ, encourage others. Why? Because God gave me a purpose. What's your purpose? What's your purpose in life? Say, well, I'm retired. What a great opportunity. You don't have to go to work. You can go ahead and serve Jesus. You don't have to get support. You've already got it. Get some people together for coffee. Bake a cake. Buy a pie, something, and have people over and tell them about Jesus. Tell them about how you got saved and what God wants you to do. Use your life, have real purpose, real meaning, and most people have no meaning. They are simply existing until the day they die. Well, what about Brother Getch's daughter yesterday that was killed? What if that was you? What meaning have you had in life? Well, I've produced kids. Well, that's good. We've got to realize he had purpose now, and he began to do things for God. God saved him. God called him to serve. He became Matthew's best friend. He gave him meaning in life, real meaning. Do you have real meaning in your life? The Bible, or not the Bible, one of the missionaries made this statement. He says, only one life, 'twill soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. The guy that built the Empire State Building, who was it? Most people don't know and don't care. So what did he accomplish in life? Nothing. The guy that built the towers, tremendous buildings. So what did he accomplish in life? Nothing. Only what's done for Christ will last. Just existing is not living. Just existing is not living. Without serving Christ, life is meaningless. Retirement is not just a time to get ready to die. It's a time of life. It's a time for Christ. Oh, yeah, we go to a few more doctor's appointments and things like that than we used to do. But we got time to call so-and-so up and say, let's go have a cup of coffee. An old friend, somebody you went to school with, somebody you've done business with all these years and everything. Take that opportunity to win them to Jesus Christ. You say, well, they won't listen. We'll try. And if they don't, that's on them, not on you. But don't just sit there and die. Do something with your life. Now, only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. So let's conclude this. Matthew gave his all to follow Jesus. It said that Matthew's ministry was to the Jews, and he died as a martyr on the mission field in Ethiopia. There is not one shred of proof to that. That's something they made up. I did some research on that. They've got Matthew dying in this place, in this place, in this place. We're going to talk about Bartholomew maybe next week. And he died in three different places in three different ways. One, they cut him up and filleted him. The other one, they beat him to death and put him in a sack and threw him in the ocean. Another day, they have him dying upside down on a cross someplace. All of that is bogus. It does not exist. God forgives our sin. This is the fact about Matthew. He has a place for us to serve, just like he had a place for Matthew to serve. God still wants to use us. Now watch this. God majors on what we are, not on what we were. So don't keep going back to the past. Don't let that stop you or stop God from using you now. Every one of us in this building tonight can make a phone call, can write a letter, can write a text, something to bring people and give them your testimony and tell them how Jesus saved you and how, I don't care if they're getting ready to die or whatever. I loved it. Jim, Alexander went next door to his neighbor. He's not doing well. And James gave him the gospel the other day, trying to help him come to Christ. We can do that. Don't get so wrapped up in yourself. Wrap yourself up in the purpose of Jesus Christ. And follow Matthew's example. Immediately follow him. Father in heaven, thank you for your love to us. Lord, you've forgiven us. Help us to forgive ourselves and get on with life, a life of serving Jesus Christ. Lord, you're the one who flips the switch, not us. Help us not to seek that. Help us to seek the service for you. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you. We can get around and shake hands with one another. You can shake hands with a pretty face this morning.